I'd like to just take a few moments tonight and meander around a sore spot in my heart on the subject of freedom. Into the scriptures, may I invite you to join me at Exodus chapter 1. I was able to, this afternoon, think of three human conditions represented in three individuals that all serve to do one thing to the mass of people, which is oppress. All three of these kinds of individuals are totalitarian in their outlook. They typically are financially elitists. Two case in points. Back in the day, Adolf Hitler started out at the bottom of the garbage pail. By the time he rose to political significance, he was a multimillionaire and had vast treasures tucked away in hidden places. And of course, the last week, one of the headlines was our dear flexible friend Vladi Putin was revealed that he had socked away millions and millions of dollars in an offshore account, while at the same time ensuring that that practice was made illegal to all the businessmen in his own country. And so, you know, absolute power corrupts, the old adage. I've always, from the time that I was very young, took exception to oppressors, always, always, and to this day, it still puts a hair up on my back and elicits a response. There is the case here in Exodus chapter 1 at verse 8, the case of the taskmaster. If I can, please, let me lead you in the reading. Now there arose up a new king over Egypt, which knew not Joseph. And he said unto his people, behold, the people of the children of Israel are more and mightier than we. Revealing a human trait of insecurity, whether real or perceived, insecurity, when it manifests, always has the potential of being very destructive. And here's a case of that. Verse 10, he says, let us deal wisely with them, lest they multiply. It come to pass that when there falleth out any war, they join also unto our enemies. That's very presumptive. But it comes out of human insecurity. So verse 11, therefore did they set over them taskmasters. Now that's probably hinting at a rough equivalent of the New Testament tax man, as was what's the little fellow's name?
Zacchaeus.
That's the guy. They set over them taskmasters to afflict them with their burdens. And then, of course, when we look at the 14th verse, it says they made their lives bitter with hard bondage, in mortar and in brick and in all manner of service in the field. All their service wherein they made them serve was with rigor. So you have here the case of the taskmaster. Arising, his fears rising out of insecurity, totally separated or divorced from historical precedent, begins to afflict the rank and file, so to speak. The blue collars. You will always have that kind of an individual. You will always have that kind of an individual in any era of time. There is a case also, if you would look please, at 1 Kings chapter 12. 1 Kings chapter 12. At the third verse in the case of Rehoboam. Rehoboam. At verse 3, he is the son of Solomon. Up to this point, Israel is still one people. What he would do in this particular context would sever the nation in such a way as that it remains so even to this day. And it arises out of the fact, as we will see, that he is insensitive. Very insensitive. The tax man. I've never known a tax man who wasn't. Insensitive. They sent and called him, Jeroboam, and all the congregation of Israel came and spake to Rehoboam, saying, they make in their case, thy father made our yoke grievous. Now therefore make the grievous service of thy father and his heavy yoke which he put on us lighter, and we will serve thee. And he said, depart 3 days, come again. So he consulted with the old men in verse 6, Solomon's counselors. And he asked for their advice. And they said, if you will be a servant unto this people this day, and wilt serve them and answer them and speak good words to them, then they will be thy servants forever. That was their advice. Then he goes on to say, he forsook the counsel of the old men, which they had given him, consulted with the young men that were grown up with him, and which stood before him. There's, again, unwise resorting to peers to the exclusion of experienced counselors. And he sought their answer, their advice. And, of course, they said, pour it on, essentially, saying, thy father made our yoke heavy, verse 10, but make thou it lighter unto us. Thou shalt say unto them, my little finger shall be thicker than my father's loins. Now, whereas my father did lade you with a heavy yoke, I will add to your yoke. I will chasten you with scorpions. So you have the tax man, insensitive tax man. What does it serve to do but oppress the people through their resources? Their resources. It is known that the power to tax is the power to control. The power to tax is the power to control. Not only is that true, but it is also true that he who has the power to say how much controls even the process. And when there's no ceiling on it, when it gets to the point where as it is pushing now, in our society, where the tax rates are so punitive that they are approaching the point where the government, even though it would tax 100% of your income or your resources, would not have enough money to pay the bills, because they keep spending, not on what they should be spending, your national defense, your protection, but all these boondoggle projects, these little grants and funds and charitable organizations that the political elitists channel your money into. Not your money, but the paper that they print up and say is money. And then, of course, the third guy. There's always a person around who thinks that they're invincible. They're untouchable. Such a guy as in 1 Samuel 17. I know that this is a very familiar place in the scriptures to each of you. But if you would look at the 17th chapter, 1 Samuel. When I was reviewing this, I was impressed with one obvious point that served as a challenge in light of some of the collateral information I'd like to share with you tonight. In 1 Samuel 17, if you would look at the fourth verse, there went out a champion out of the camp of the Philistines. He's the one that's there. Verse 8 and 9, he stood and cried unto the armies of Israel and said to them, why are ye come out to set your battle in array? Am I not a Philistine? You servants of Saul, choose you a man, for you let him come down to me. If you be able to fight with me and kill me, then we will be your servants. But if I prevail against him and kill him, then shall be your servants and serve us. You know the story about all that. But here's the obvious point to be taken as a challenge in light of what you and I face in the year 2016. Do you realize that the enemy was the only army that fielded a warrior on the battlefield until David comes? There was only one guy willing to fight for what they wanted, and that was Goliath. Now that's a challenge. I know that this has changed over the years. It seems to me to be much shorter, but as an 18-year-old kid, I swore this oath. And the oath was that, as it is stated today, it's all dressed up and prettied. It says, I do solemnly swear that I will support and defend the Constitution of the USA against all enemies, foreign or domestic, that I will obey the orders of the President of the U.S. and the officers appointed over me according to the regulations under the Uniform Code of Military Justice. So help me God. Now, I remember as a kid I said that. I would have been fine if I could have got away with saying the oath, gone to boot camp, and they could have sent me home to sit it out. I've been happy with that. I wasn't looking for a fight. You know, really didn't. Wasn't all that patriotic at that point. But as it turned out, they made me live up to the oath. And so what occurs to me is that oath does not have a termination point. I read the oath that they administer to the officers, and theirs is limited, specifically in their oath, to a term of 4 to 6 years. Now, the individual can extend that as long as they like, and most of them choose to do so. But at a minimum, if once they raise their hand, they say their oath, they're on the hook for 4, maybe 6 years. But the enlisted guys, there's no severing. There's no termination. So I looked at that and thought it over, and I thought to myself, you know, as an American citizen, I'm still compelled to live under the oath. And that's what I intend to do. As I said, I've always been allergic to and took exception to oppression and people who tried to bully their way around force issues. I received a little note from Ted Clater today. He's been keeping up on his correspondence over the past couple of weeks, reading everything I can get my hands on the public debate in Pennsylvania over the lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender legislation that basically have been summarized in House Bill 1510 and Senate Bill 974. And basically, as it's been called by some, the bathroom bills, and the essence of the legislation being forced and pushed vigorously by the governor of the state of Pennsylvania, Tom Wolf, is that if these bills pass, then it will be against the law to discriminate whether you are talking about a family-owned business where it comes to employment practices or service of any kind or hiring practices in any business or Christian or religious organization. Somebody enters our doors, these folks, these LG, whatever they call them, they may sometime enter our facilities and sit down in the pew to worship. Well, they're perfectly welcome to do that. And they can certainly introduce themselves as so-and-so and so-and-so, and I'll introduce myself as so-and-so and so-and-so, and in the hopes that the gospel penetrating their hearts would alter their way of thinking and that God would have mercy upon them. I mean, you always hope and pray for that. But in theory, people would be able to come into our buildings and force their agenda on us. And of course, we don't have to go along with the program, but then we cannot avoid going to court and paying out a king's ransom to defend our constitutional and biblical right to freedom of conscience. So when anybody seeks to oppress, especially toying with the conscience of another person, trying to manipulate their view of what's right and wrong on me, though I hold completely opposite and very specific viewpoints, it seems to me that something just doesn't wash there and should not be permitted. And so I would challenge you to refuse or try to keep yourself from becoming emotionally wrapped in the issue, but read. Get your facts straight. Get your story written. And then call your elected officials here in the state of Pennsylvania and appeal to them that whenever these two bills, whether in the House or in the Senate, come up for a vote, either in committee or on the floor, that they vote negative. Okay? But refuse to just simply shoot from the hip on this, on an assumption that you know what you're talking about. Because when you start talking to their aides and their advisors, they're gonna, especially if you call in with a contrary viewpoint, they're gonna pick your brain and they're gonna want specifics. And before they pass anything up the food chain, they're gonna wanna make sure you know what you're talking about. And then you have the courage to ask that individual for his name, record the date you spoke with them, and ask them to send you a written copy of my representative's position and determined action on this bill. And then call back with a follow-up in a reasonable amount of time to ask, well, where's my letter? And keep after them. Don't let the enemy be the only one in the field. And then there is this one on a much broader range. If you want to take this in your prayer notes, I'm going to give you the states that are involved here. What I'm speaking to is about the 16 attorneys general across the state, across the union, that are going to force fines and or jail upon climate deniers. The attorney generals of the following states are all together with Alger on this project. They are the attorney general from California, go figure, Connecticut, Illinois, Iowa, Maine, Maryland, Massachusetts, Minnesota, New Mexico, New York, Oregon.
Jeez, slow down.
I'll get them. Rhode Island, Vermont, Virginia, and Washington State. I'll go back again. California, Connecticut, Illinois, Iowa. The reason I'm asking you to write these down because I want you to pray in a specific way for each of these individuals. Maryland, Massachusetts, Minnesota, New Mexico, New York, Oregon, Rhode Island, Vermont, Virginia, and Washington State. As well as the Attorney General for the District of Columbia and the Virgin Islands, if you want to add them too. Now, out of the 17 folks elected to office, 16 of them are Democrat, the other one's an independent. Okay? Basically, to put this in a context, let me read this to you so that you can understand where this is heading. If you go back to 1478, some of you may remember. The Spanish Inquisition systematically silenced any citizen who held views that did not align with the king's. Using the powerful arm of the government, the Grand Inquisitor, whose name then was Thomas de Torquemada, and his henchmen sought out all those who held religious, scientific, or moral views that conflicted with the monarchs, punishing the heretics with jail sentences, property confiscation, fines, and in severe cases, torture and execution. One of the lasting results of the Spanish Inquisition was a stifling of speech, of thought, and scientific debate throughout Spain. By treating one set of scientific views as absolute, infallible, and above critique, Spain silenced many brilliant individuals and stopped the development of new ideas and technological innovations. Spain became and remains today a scientific backwater. As an old adage says, those who cannot remember the past are condemned to repeat it. So we have now a new Inquisition underway in America, something that would have seemed unimaginable not too long ago, treating climate change as an absolute, unassailable fact instead of what it is, an unproven, controversial scientific theory. A group of state attorneys generals have announced that they will begin targeting any companies that challenge the catastrophic climate change religion. That's their term. I don't know where the First Amendment fits in with all this, but speaking at a press conference on March 29th, New York Attorney General Eric Schneiderman said, "The bottom line is simple. Climate change is real." He went on to say that if companies are committing fraud by lying about the dangers of climate change, they will pursue them to the fullest extent of the law. And so they have formed this grand coalition with Internet Al standing off to the side and clapping for the whole process. They are threatening legal action and huge fines against anyone who declines to believe in that climate hoax. Now, if that isn't bad enough, the U.S. Attorney General, Loretta Lynch, admitted that the Justice Department is discussing the possibility of pursuing civil actions against climate change deniers, which takes it out of the corporate level to the individual level, and that she has already referred it to the FBI to consider whether or not it meets the criteria for which federal law enforcement could take action. Now, whenever I read things like that, the hair on my back stands up. So I've chosen tonight to bring this to prayer meeting in the hopes that any who would be here, and thankful that you guys are here for this, would take the attorneys generals for those states that I gave you to record and begin your imprecatory prayer process with regards to them. Can I say it that way? I leave it to you to decide how you want to approach that. But, you know, this is America still. And I'm proud to be an American. I'm not going to give the ground, and I don't want, I mean, look, there are, I know about time constraints. You know, I do. And I know that people got a multitude of other things on their plate, different assortment trials and tests and so forth and like that. But I don't want to allow the enemy to be the only one standing in the battlefield uncontested. And so if all I have is a slingshot, comparatively, then I will use that.